Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Thipboksan Monpadi. She's from Northeast Thailand. She's a researcher on the Mekong River and its tributary environment. So first off, thank you for your work in the world. And second, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you for inviting me to join the radio program. It's a pleasure.
Well, thank you. So let's start by, can you tell people about the Mekong River and also it's the tributary that you seem to know most about, which is the Songkram. So can you talk about both of those, please?
Yes, absolutely. First off, I would like to talk about the Mekong River. Just to introduce it to all of you that who may not know about it. The Mekong River is originated in the Tibetan Plateau in Yunnan province of China, and it flows through another five downstream countries, including Myanmar, Laos, Thailand, Cambodia, and finally Vietnam, where the river joins South China Sea. The total length of the Mekong is 4,350 kilometers or about 2,700 miles. It is the longest river in Southeast Asia and 12th longest in the world. In addition to that, it is the river of great diverse ethnic city, according to the World Wild Fund for Nature, a non-governmental organization. There are more than 95 different ethnic groups living in the Mekong Basin. The river has unique ecology, ecosystem, and waterscape that makes it the second most biodiversity after the Amazon in South America. Some of the iconic fish, aquatic animals, and plants in the Mekong are such as endangered giant catfish, which is a migratory species that rarely found nowadays. Another significant aquatic animal in the Mekong that is also critically endangered is Irrawaddy dolphin, with now less than 100 populations exist in the Mekong, in Laos and Cambodian border. For the plants that are unique to the Mekong River are such as krait tree. This is the name that we call in Thai. This tree is grown on the rocks in the Mekong. So it grown in the water. When the water rise, it grown there, and then when water lower, it still stay there in the rock. And there is another plant called dogweed, or in another name is known as Cryptocoryloensis, that is only found in the Mekong in Chiang Khan District, Lui province of Thailand. For Songkram River, it is one of the major tributaries of the Mekong in the northern part of the northeast region of Thailand. It flows through five provinces, including Sakon Nakhon, Udon Thani, Nong Khai, Bung Kan, and then joins the Mekong in Nakhon Phanom, with the length of 420 kilometers or about 260 miles, covering the area of 13,450 square kilometers. Along the Songkram River is a flooded forest, which is very important for the local people and for the fish from the Mekong to come into the Songkram River for spawn and, you know, for spawning and lay eggs and, you know, for the local fisher folks that can make livelihood as well.
So let's talk for just a moment about the giant catfish that my understanding is that at one time they were so common that their migration was one of the largest animal by weight, largest animal migrations in the world. Is that true?
Yes, it was. But nowadays, as I mentioned earlier, that it is now rarely seen and it's become an endangered species in the Mekong. This is due to many projects on the Mekong River that built to block the river flow, and that also impact to the fish migration. So actually the giant catfish is the migratory fish species. It travel from downstream to upstream to to spawn. But because of the dams upstream, especially in China, that now build 11 dams that block the river flow, the natural flow. So this caused a significant of the natural flow of the river. Nowadays, the water level in the Mekong is very low, and that impacts how the fish is migrate as well. And it's also impact the ecology of the river itself by ways that it reduces the natural sediment from the upstream to downstream, that is also, a part of it is, a nutrient for the plants in the river, and that plants that in the river eat also food for the fish itself as well. Yeah.
And so I've heard about the dams on the Mekong and how they obviously interrupt the flow, but I haven't heard much about water removal. I mean, like in the Colorado River sometimes no longer reaches the ocean, and the same is true for the Rio Grande River in the United States and Mexico. And is there a lot of water taken out for irrigation or industrial projects from the Mekong, as well as interrupting the flow itself?
In the Mekong River, major of the impact that caused the ecology change is because of the hydropower dams upstream, 11 dams in China, and more recently, 2 dams in Laos. With the water that is blocked by the dam, I think that is the main part of the problem, because a lot of water are holding in the dam reservoirs. So it doesn't actually flow free as in the past when there were no dams. So those most of the dam that are in the Mekong now is for electricity, and actually not for industrial that taking out the water, but actually the Thai government actually plan to divert the Mekong water for irrigation in the northeast of Thailand. The project is ongoing now, and which is also very critical. Critics are also concerned about this project, because as of now, the water level in the Mekong is, very low than it usually used to be already. So the key question is, how would there be enough water to take from the Mekong for irrigation in the northeast Thailand? And the project that the Thai government is doing is very huge, and it costs a lot of money, like billions of dollars. So in the future, if the Thai government continue to do this, it would be a big disaster for the environment, because the dam, hydroelectric dams in China and in Laos has already been causing a huge problem to downstream countries, for the fish, for the aquatic animals, and for the people, local people who depend on the river for their livelihoods already.
Kind of a different subject. I've seen maps before of the Mississippi in the United States prior to dredging and damming, and it was so neat to see. I love seeing the maps, because the river would flow all over the place. And somebody once told me, a biologist once told me, that we completely misdefine rivers because we think that they flow in one place, but the truth is that they constantly change their course slightly and will do different channels. And prior to all these dams, did the Mekong move across the landscape like that, or was it pretty channelized already? Do you see what I'm asking?
Yes. The Mekong itself that originate in Yunnan province of China and flows down to another five downstream countries that I mentioned before. Well, actually, the river, when it flows naturally, it would actually change the course a little bit, but in a natural way that does not actually impact the ecology. It would actually, erode the riverbank over time, then it changed course. But if there is no dam to block the river, the natural flow of the river, the sediment will come back again in the next monsoon season or the next raining season. So it fill up the erosion. But for nowadays, there is, very less sediment because it was blocked by the dams. And when the water flow, we call it a hungry river because there is, almost none of the sediment coming from the river. This hungry river phenomenon means that there is no sediment from the river, and then it caused the river it caused the river to be clear, right, like a blue sky color. And with less water flow from, upstream, it also makes the moisture in the riverbank less as well. So with less moisture along the riverbank and exacerbated by climate change and, prolonged drought, it caused more erosion. And in the next rainy season, as we already have the dam holding water, it doesn't actually release the water or discharge the water to the downstream enough. So the land erosion is occur more and more, and it accelerate the erosion and the waterscape, how the river course is status should be, I would say that. Yeah.
Thank you for that. So another question is, in the Pacific Northwest in the United States, there were and are indigenous people who they would be called salmon cultures because their entire way of life was based on the salmon. And the killing off of the salmon populations has affected their cultures very much. And you've talked about people living along the Mekong, and you said that there were many, many cultures living along the river. And before we talk about the cultures and how the harm to the river has affected the cultures in general, a specific question is, were there cultures based around the giant catfish, because this huge influx of animals, were there cultures based on that or not so much?
I would say it's similar, but in a different way. For the giant catfish, they would catch in some specific places in the Mekong. For example, in the northern Thailand, in Chiang Rai province, the people there used to catch the giant catfish like once a year. They catch like just only a few of the giant catfish, and then that is enough for the whole family or for the whole community already for consumption and, and for a little bit of income. They don't, hunt a lot of them to survive or for sale. There is a ceremony that they do to the giant catfish, because people believe that the giant catfish is, you know, a sacred, fish as well, because of the, you know, the size of the giant catfish, and, you know, it comes once a year, not all year round. So people would actually like pray before they hunt or catch the giant catfish to pay respect. And that is the culture that they pay for the giant catfish. They know that it's a sacred, but you know, when they take the giant catfish for survive, it means that they don't take it for granted. They respect that the life that has given to them is to continue their life. Yes.
So before we talk more about cultures, you've said a couple times that there is less water in the river. Can you give us an idea how much less water, like how wide or how deep or both, would the Mekong have been 200 years ago, and how wide or deep would it be now?
I don't know in numbers, but I can explain that in the past, when there were no dams on the Mekong River, the river would increase very high up to the edge of where the almost like where the riverbank reached to the community area. But nowadays it's very low into like you know, like low, like, you know, even in the rainy season it is not rise up unto where the riverbank is used to be. So the indication that we can say that it's very low is that, for example, at this time of year, the river would still be, at, let's say it would be average, water level, but now it's very low, and you can even like almost walk across, to another side of the river, like from Thailand to Laos, it very low like that. And then, the riverbed is shallow. And the freshwater algae grow because the riverbed is shallow, and then it reflect with the light, sunlight. And so it grow very quickly. That is how what happened, an indication of how low the river is right now.
So what? So let's back up for a second. And when were the dams first started to be put on the Mekong?
The first dam was built in China back in, I think 20 years ago. And that was a very huge dam, the hydroelectric dam. And after that, China continued to build another 10 more dams. And that has been accumulated the environmental issues to the downstream country. Like I said many times about the, it blocks the natural flow of the river. It has impacts on ecology. It changed the environment, and it impacts the fish migration in the Mekong.
And this is a very recent problem then. It's not like the first dams on the Columbia River in the United States were back in the 30s or 20s. And so this is actually very recent, right?
Yes. I should also say that not just only the natural flow of the river is gone, but it means that the water in the Mekong has been unnaturally or unseasonally fluctuation, because it depends on when the dams is operated. When the dam is released, the water, and then suddenly the river would increase, and when they close the dam gate, then the water become lower. Just like within one day, the fishermen when I met the fishermen, they said this a lot, and everybody point out to the dam that caused this water fluctuation.
And something that I don't hear enough people talk about, but it's just horrifying, is that all of the creatures along there evolved with seasonal fluctuations, not daily fluctuations. And so there is, for example, a lot of insect populations who if they lay their eggs when they're supposed to, the water level can drop and rise over a day, as opposed to what they evolved with, which is that it is high in the spring and low in the fall. And it messes up insect populations, it messes up bird populations, it messes up fish populations, and everybody else.
Yes, that is true about the Mekong situation right now as well. The fishermen that I met also told me about the insect population that used to lay eggs in a certain time of year in the Mekong, that it's also, food source of the fish in the river has now gone. So they don't see that those insects lay eggs in the river anymore when they try to go fishing.
So in many ways, the what is central to a lot of my concerns are let's just skip that. Can you talk about the effects on the different, well, let's back up a second. So many of the cultures that live along the Mekong, how long have they been there? Have they been there for hundreds or thousands of years? And then what has been the effect of the destruction of the fisheries and the other changes to the Mekong on the local cultures? Obviously, every culture is different.
Yes. People where the river flows is where the people actually build a community. So I would say that people live along the Mekong for hundreds of years. We cannot imagine how long. Because the river is a source of life. The water is a source of life. So people look for the river or where the stream is located, and then they build a community nearby so they can, grow the plant and do farming and fish for survive. With the fish population decline in the Mekong due to development projects happening, I wouldn't say development project because it caused a lot of impact to the environment and ecology and the fish population, and finally the people who depends on natural resources in the Mekong. So I wouldn't call that development, but I would say, large scale projects that cause the impacts, something like that. It's better to say. The river is vital for the communities living along the river because it's the traditional way of life that people living along the river, usually catch fish for consumption and earn income to support their family. But nowadays, since the fish population decline, they don't have many options. They cannot only rely on the river anymore, and it is a big challenge for them to change from you know, the traditional way of life that they used to be since they grown up, like, let's say from 20, 30 years ago when they were small and then used to go to fish with their parents and then learn how to fish in the Mekong River. And now they cannot do that anymore. The people nowadays, then they have to, you know, find a way to find job in the city, in the big city, to earn the income. But it doesn't mean that everybody will be successful in finding a new job in the big city, because of course that they have certain set of knowledge to make a living, but it doesn't mean that they are less important than the others. So I would say that we have to really realize that and respect the way of life or the livelihoods of the people who depends especially directly from the resources or the natural services of the Mekong River. We have to understand that this is their way of life and their livelihood is important. You cannot force them to just like quickly change into another occupation.
This may be beyond the scope of the interview, but I do want to ask that did China get the permission of the nations downstream to put in the dams, or was that all unilateral?
There is an intergovernmental organization called the Mekong River Commission that was established in 1995. But the member of the Mekong River Commissions includes only four countries, which are Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. China and Myanmar are only dialogue partner. So the dams in China that were built, they did not notify or ask permission from downstream countries, because major of the river is in China part, and they call the river, the Mekong River in China, Lanchang River. And because there is, you know, there is not the idea of thinking that this river is an international river. So China went ahead and then build all those dams without asking any permission, because they think that the river is in their territory. But actually, if we look beyond that, the river is going across the countries through six countries. So that was actually something that China should realize and should not have any more planned dams, you know, and including Thailand, Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia, and Vietnam as well. We should realize that this river belong to all the community that it flows through, not just only one country. Otherwise, the problem keeps coming. Yes.
So can you talk a little bit more about the Songkhram River?
Yes, sure. So, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, that the Songkhram is one of the major tributary of the Mekong. The river itself has a unique relationship with the Mekong. I mentioned a little bit about the flooded forest in the Songkhram. Okay, let's take back when there were no dams on the Mekong River. When there was a natural flow and in the monsoon season, the water level in the Mekong could expand into the Songkhram River from the mouth up to 200 kilometers, or which is about 120 miles. So that means it allows the fish species from the Mekong to come into the Songkram River to lay eggs and spawn in the flooded forest. And the flooded forest is also the area where those fish can, you know, have a safe place to spawn. And a little bit more on that is that when the fish came to spawn, it is when the local people can catch the fish, which is, you know, plenty of them in the past. And that is enough for their, you know, living and maybe some income as well. And, when the water level, decrease in the dry season, the Songkram River, has the flooded forest along it. And then the flooded forest, when in the dry season, become a supermarket, a natural supermarket. Bamboo shoot, mushroom, and many other edible plants.
And is it, I read somewhere that the Songkram is not dammed. Is that true?
Well, I wish I could say that, but I learned that there is already at least one, not hydroelectric dam, but it's they called it in Thai, let's say like discharge gate, something like that, which, it's something like, it's a reservoir that blocked the Songkram already that was completed in 2019. I went there to check, because I heard from the Bungkan is the province where I used to work there. And I got the information from the Bungkan municipality that they proposed, 22 dams project, to build on the Songkram River. And then I found out that there is already one dam reservoir for irrigation, that was already built. And I also found the fisherman living in the area. And then I asked him about what had been changed after they built this, dam on the Songkram. He said that, it already blocked the, rapids area, like the rock where is there is a rock in the river. And, that area is where the fish actually come and, you know, live. And people, the fishermen usually, can catch the fish there. So that means the Songkram River is now not a free floating river at all.
And did you say that there's 22 more dams planned for the Songkram?
Yes. Yes.
And what are the chances that those dams are actually going to go in? And I presume there's a lot of resistance to them.
People don't actually know that there is the proposed dam projects on the Songkram River. That is the problem. Well, I would say that, this will be a big issue, because it's a top-down project. Is a top-down planning process that local people don't know the detail about the design of the dam. They don't even get to participate in talking about what will be the future of the Songkram River. Only the government officers who proposed the dams on the Songkram River just, you know, say that these dams that proposed will be helping with drought and flood. This is just assumption, you know, is a discord that they always use to make way for the project to happen. But the local people themselves who rely on the natural services from the Songkram River, never get a chance to say their concerns or raise their voice, what they actually want.
And when I mentioned earlier about the Mississippi River changing course, I wasn't suggesting that that it's a bad thing when it changes course, because that's one of, you were talking about the sediment, and that's one of the ways that a lot of areas gain their tremendously fertile soil, is through seasonal flooding that brings in the sediment from upstream, which brings in a lot of nutrients. So I don't, when they talk about flood control, it always makes me very nervous for a bunch of reasons. One of them is that people get displaced by the areas that are permanently flooded behind the dam. It kills the rivers. And also it, you know, some of the worst floods in history have come when they put in dams and then dams fail. It's the people, my point is that I'm guessing that the people who've lived along the Mekong for hundreds of years, that those communities are used to the seasonal water changes, and that's a part of their life.
Yes, it is true. And those dams on the Mekong, especially the one in Laos called Sayabri, which is invested by Thai investor but located in Laos, is called Sayabri, is actually located very near to the fault line called Dien Bien Phu fault line, which is an active fault line. So it is very risky that if earthquake happened, the dam could be collapse and cause a tremendous disaster to downstream communities. And I don't think there is warning system yet about this. So I don't know how come they allowed to build the dam on the fault line area. So it is very dangerous that, you know, we really need to think about when building the dam as well.
So earlier you mentioned I believe it was a porpoise, that there's less than 100 individuals. What was that species? I don't remember the name.
It's called Irrawaddy dolphin. It's a freshwater dolphin.
Can you spell that so people can look it up?
Okay, so it's called Irrawaddy and then dolphin.
Okay, and were they, is the primary problem for them or the primary threat to them also dams, or is it something else?
Apart from dam itself, that called Don Sahong in Laos, but near the Cambodian border where they live today, is also illegal fishing. That means they face a threat from, you know, people who would like to catch them with, you know, illegal fish trap. That is also one thing that we need to take into account, not just only the dam. The dam is actually threatening them at the first place in terms of, you know, it located in the major fish passage area where the fish would migrate from the Tonle Sap Lake in Cambodia up to that channel, and the Don Song Dam is blocking that channel. So that means this animal I don't know exactly if they consume or eat small fish, but I think the threat of the dam is that what I got from the news is that because they have to explode the rocky area to build the dam, and so it kind of like hurting the Irrawaddy dolphin as well.
Thank you for that. So we've talked a lot about, or some, about the Mekong and the Songkram. Can you talk specifically a little bit about your work in the region. What is your focus?
Yes, my work is focusing on the ecology and environment and also social development of the local community in the Mekong region. In particularly, I work with the communities in Thailand and partly with the network in other Mekong countries like in Laos and in Cambodia and in Vietnam, also in China a little bit. When I talk about working on social development with the people in the Mekong region in Thailand, is that I support them to promote the environmental quality in their community. So, for example, talking to them and decide activities with the community along the Mekong River in Bungan province to do the organic farming along the riverbank, because some of the villagers who plant the vegetable along the Mekong River in Bungan, they still use the chemical fertilizer, especially for tomato. So I raised that question to them because they not only fish on the Mekong, it's not only going to impact the fish in the Mekong, which is already declined nowadays, but it's also has implication to the public health, because the community, many communities in along the Mekong, they also use the water from the Mekong for the tap water. So when the water rises in the monsoon season, not as much as it rise in the past when there were no dams, but still the contaminated chemical soil will be going to the water, to the Mekong water directly, and so it will be contaminated. So I raised that concern with the community.
So let's say that there was an intergovernmental panel that was going to do things about the Mekong, and they asked you to speak from the perspective of what would be the best for the river. What would you be advocating for? What are the best things that could happen for the Mekong River itself?
Well, I would like to emphasize that the Mekong River is an international river. It's not belong to one government. It belong to the people. So people have the right to participate in any future or existing projects that is happening on the Mekong, either water projects or dam projects. They need to take part in decision-making processes whether or not they want it. But the government seems to lack of this meaningful participation by the local people. Many dams that happen on the Mekong is going ahead because of lack of the voices of the community, even though there has been many advocates and campaigns to against the large-scale dams project and water project on the Mekong. So I would like to note that people have to take part to make a decision in this project that will happen to the Mekong, and that the government need to really, really take their voices and their concerns seriously, not just going ahead and leaving them behind to have, to be an affected people and later on compensated them that never be, never be enough because their livelihood has gone. It cannot be compensated by money.
So if people want to find out more about either your work or more generally efforts to protect the Mekong or the Songkram, how can they find out more about your work or about efforts to protect those rivers?
I wish I can show you more work, which is I work for the Mekong Commons website, but the website is now under improvement and design, so it cannot be accessed now. But in the future, you will be able to access it because we are undertaking this work. So it's called Mekong Commons. And there is another regional group of civil societies, academic, and you know, people who are concerned about the Mekong river situations called Save the Mekong Coalition. I think you can check out about those work that people have been working on to protect the river. They have the Facebook page. You can just search and you can see the updates there.
So I guess my last question is there anything else you've wanted to say about the river or the region or the ecology or the people that I haven't given you the opportunity?
Like I said, people living along the Mekong, they have, you know, a rich knowledge about the river itself, the rich knowledge about the plant along the river, the rich knowledge about the fish species in the Mekong. So these people are very important to be part of a protector of the river itself. And yet they are also one of the most vulnerable people to be affected by the ecological deterioration and livelihoods collapse due to the top-down planning and decision-making of the projects. So I would really want you know, people in power to really open up their mind and take into account very seriously of the voices and concern of the local people when whatever they plan on the river.
Well, thank you so much for that, and thank you for all of your work in the world. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Tipaksin Monpati. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.